Welcome to Loco, a weekly conversation celebrating the stories of unconventional yet phenomenal single women expats. Today, I speak with Nicole Abramowski, an American turned German resident. We talk about the path that led her to call Berlin home. Hey, Nicole, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate you showing up.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. So we'll just get right into it as I usually do. If you could just introduce yourself and let us know where you're from.
Yeah, so my name's Nicole Abramowski, and I'm from the U.S., from Long Island, but I've been living in Berlin, Germany since 2011.
You're in Berlin. You're located in Berlin now.
I'm based in Berlin. I'm in Thailand right now, actually, but Berlin is my home base.
And how did you get to Berlin? Why Berlin?
Yeah, so to kind of condense the story, basically I studied abroad in England as a student and I wanted to go back there, but they got rid of the kind of working holiday visa that applied to Americans. So in my what do I do after graduation kind of state, I Googled how can I not live in America, and I just sort of let Google decide my fate. And I ended up moving to Prague and doing the whole English teaching thing. I got my TOEFL. I lived there for 6 months, but I hired a lawyer to do my visa and she just didn't do it. So I had to leave. So I decided to do the whole Euro trip thing for 5 months with the going around on Europe on trains. And that's how I ended up in Berlin. So basically, I knew nothing about Berlin, really. And I had a friend living in Stuttgart who happened to move to Berlin the week that I had set aside to visit her. So I just went to Berlin instead. And I happened to have a fantastic week. Like, I just met really cool people. I really liked the city. So I decided, okay, this is where I want to come back. So I went back to the States and for 10 months and I learned German and I saved money. And then I moved over there in 2011.
Wow. So you're in Prague, but why is it that the attorney didn't do the visa work for you?
They just didn't. I mean, some of it was my fault because I was in my early 20s then, and I didn't really realize that you need to check up on the people that you hire. So I just kind of hired them, told them my situation. They took my documents. They were like, okay, well, I told them when I entered the country because you only have the 3 month Schengen thing. And I just figured that they would do their job. And then the day before, a couple days before my Schengen was to run out, I called them and I said, so what's going on with this? And the person was like, oh, your lawyer's on vacation and won't be back for 2 weeks. And I was like, well, is my visa done? And they were like, no, sorry. And I was like, what?
Wow.
So they just didn't do it. I don't really know any other reason why. And then I went to pick up, I think I needed to get my passport from them or something. And then they tried to charge me for all the translations they did. And I was like, but you didn't, I have to leave the country. Like, no.
Right.
Yeah.
Strange. So you ended up in Berlin in 2011. And... Mm-hmm. That's quite interesting. I like the fact that you're able to sort of just go with the flow and live in the moment and just sort of do what you're doing. So tell me about the process of coming back to the States, learning German, and then what visa did you use to get to Berlin?
So learning German was kind of it's the most motivated thing I've ever done in my life. So while I was doing this Euro trip, I basically just bought an equivalent of German for Dummies, a book. And I would sit, I wasn't really working. So I would sit in cafes each day and do a chapter of that book. And then the BBC had this horrible soap opera German lesson on their website at that time. Maybe it's still there. I did that entire thing. So that was really helpful for speaking and listening. And then when I went back to the States, I was able to go right into intermediate German. So I audited 2 German classes at my old university and it only cost $50 each. So that allowed me to take university German, quality classes. And yeah, so I didn't get grades or transcripts, but I feel like for language, it doesn't really matter. If you can speak a language, you can speak a language. You can show that you can speak it. So I was fluent by the end of that. So I did that in about 10 months. I learned fluent German. And then I moved to Berlin. And I came there on the freelance visa, but actually I first came on the au pair visa because I freaked out last minute. And I was like, cause you can't really get the freelance visa for English teaching before you come. There's just too much competition. They don't really take you seriously until you are in the country. And because it hadn't worked out for me in Prague, I sort of freaked out and wanted a solid plan before I came. So I signed up to be an au pair, which was stupid because I don't really like kids. and it ended up being terrible.
Okay.
both because it's not really my ideal line of work and because the family I got was just very, they basically wanted me on call at all times. They wouldn't give me any structure for like when it was my on time, when was my off time. And it was just not a good fit. So I quit that after 3 weeks and I applied. I had made a list of English teaching schools before, while I was still in the US, because that had been my original plan. So I basically sent off my application to all of them. And I had applied to a couple of them once before while I was still in the US, and they told me, get in touch once you're in Germany. So I emailed them as well. And one of them happened to need somebody. So I came there a week, like I think it was either a couple of days or a week later. And they had a big project they needed me for, like a 3 month long full-time project. So they were like, all right, we got to get you in there quickly. So I did the freelance visa. They wrote me the first letter I needed for it, because you need a couple letters from companies saying that they're interested in giving the work. And so they helped me with that. And I had another job interview that another company gave me the letter in the interview. And then I never heard from them again, but that was all I needed. And yeah, so I started that whole process. I got the freelance visa, I think within a week. I got it the same day. I showed up at 5 a.m. to immigration, was there for half the day, and walked out with the visa.
You know, I have a question about that, a follow-up to that. However, I want to go back for a minute. What was it about leaving America, or was it that you were drawn to Berlin, or were you just interested in leaving the States? I mean, what's the backstory?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've thought about it since then. At the time, I don't really think I had concrete thoughts in my head about it. Some of it was that I had had such a great time in England studying abroad that I just wanted to go back there. And when it didn't work with England, I was just like, whatever, I'll take Europe. But I think a lot of it is when I was graduating, most of my friends were getting their first jobs, going to grad school, doing that. And I was still kind of like, I want to keep exploring. I don't know about y'all, but you know, like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do what everyone I see back in the US is doing. And I saw a lot more people that are still kind of adventuring and seeing the world when I was studying abroad. So I was like, all right, that seems to be where that's happening. I just want to go there. And I had just made a great group of friends in England, and I kind of wanted to be closer to them. I had great friends in the US, but they were all going to move across the US. So there wasn't going to be one city or something where all my friends were. So I think that was kind of my initial push. Since then, it's definitely developed. I mean, there's a lot of things I appreciate more about living in Berlin and Germany and Europe. I like that the public transportation's better. My rent is more affordable. I feel like, I mean, things are just in general cheaper. I like that for the weekend, I can go to another country. And I also have like a great group of friends now in Berlin who are really interested in exploring, also pretty settled in Germany and up for adventures. Whereas now I feel still in the US, though I have many friends I really care about, the path is much more to kind of get married, buy a house, have kids. And that's great.
I understand. Like, non-conventional is where you are. And I mean, I completely get that. So basically the podcast, as you know, is about women who feel drawn to the place that resonates as home. Now, I know that you said initially that you were just living, basically. And now it seems that Berlin has become home by virtue of the fact that other things sort of fell through. Was there a time where you were feeling a pull towards something that resonated as home? And how do you feel about it now? Like, I know Berlin is home now, I believe.
Yeah. Over time, there's definitely been ups and downs. I would say my first year in Berlin was really difficult, but also really exciting because everything was new. And then my second and third year was sort of when all of the reality of being an adult kicked in. Like, I had to figure out taxes. I was kind of like done living with crazy roommates who had drunk boyfriends showing up and ringing the bell at all times. So I needed like a nice, stable, clean place to live. I sort of learned what party friends were at that time. So I was 24 when I first moved to Berlin. So that's kind of the mindset I was in. But I think in college and when in my early 20s, I used to just think everyone was my friend. And then when I went through this time where I was sort of overwhelmed with everything, I realized that I had a lot of party friends, but not a lot of real friends. So that was sort of the draw. And I was quite homesick in that time because I have real friends in the US, obviously, because I grew up there and, you know, I just had more time in the US to make those friends. But then that kind of evened out. And I think that happens to a lot of people, you know, like you're you go somewhere and you think everything's perfect about that place, and then you realize the faults, and you're like, oh, that's terrible. And then it sort of bounces out to like a realistic view. Does that answer your question?
No, I get part of what you're saying. I think I was more so asking, Berlin is home now. Mm-hmm. Do you feel complete?
Okay. Yeah, I have kind of a wandering soul, I think. So, but Berlin, even this time I'm in Thailand, right? So I left Berlin on a good note. And that's always kind of the test. Because, for example, when I left the US and moved to Berlin, I didn't really want to go back to the US. And now I left Berlin for 6 months to travel Asia, and I actually do want to go back to Berlin. So I would say that Berlin definitely feels like home, and I feel mostly complete. There's some things that, you know, I feel like I don't totally fit in, but I also think that there's never going to be one place that's 100% perfect in every single way.
Right, exactly. I believe that as well. I mean, there's no such thing as perfection, right? So mm-hmm. I completely get what you're saying. Okay, so getting back to the point that we were making about the visa and your freelance application and getting status. So tell me more about what happened. You were there for the entire day. What does that look like applying for this freelance visa? And how does someone say the avatar for this show is basically a single woman who's a solopreneur interested in, say, migrating to the place that resonates at home? And because I'm talking to you about Berlin, naturally, I want to know about the actual process and how perhaps someone else can do it as well.
Yes. So there are a few things you need. Well, first, there's a few options. So I did the freelance visa under the category. Well, that's under the category of the self-employment visa. So freelance means you're kind of working for other clients and companies. Self-employment would be you have your own company. So those are both options under the same visa. They just have slightly different documents that they need. And then there's an artist visa under that too, which is basically the freelance visa, but for artists. So you need to have like a portfolio and stuff like that versus a CV kind of thing. And then for all of them, there's also a language learning visa if you just want to come for a year. There's a preparing to study visa if you're planning to come study. And there's a searching for employment visa if you have studied and you want to get a job in Germany. So there's all these options. These are the ones that don't require sponsorship from a company. That's also an option too. But for me at 24 with not a ton of high up work experience, that wasn't really something that was going to happen for me at that time. So I went with the freelance visa. So for the freelance visa, you need insurance that's accepted in Germany. That's the biggest one. So it has to be, it can't just be traveler's insurance. And this seems to be a big confusion. I see in forums people posting all the time, I want an international insurance. And then I travel full time. I need an international insurance that covers everything. And people just comment their traveler's insurance. And these are two different things. So traveler's insurance is for traveling. International insurance is when you live abroad or maybe you permanently travel or you live maybe in multiple places and you want an insurance like you would have at home where you can get your checkups and all of, you know, all those kind of things, just not in your home country. So you have to have one of those. That's the most complicated one, and it can be the most expensive. I would recommend you just talk to an insurance broker. That's what I did, because they stay up on all of the laws. So it makes, and it's free. There's a law, you want to choose one that's not affiliated with one specific company, because then obviously they're just going to recommend that company to you. But otherwise, as long as you choose one that's not from one company, they're required to get the same amount of commission from all the companies. So they wouldn't recommend one to you just because they earn more money or something. So I worked with this great guy named Mike, and he was super helpful. He at the time when you first come as a non-EU citizen, you don't have that many options. So he told me which one would work. He wrote me all my paperwork for my visa. Then you need these two letters, like I said, from people that want to hire you. So this is just to show immigration that there's interest, that you'll be able to kind of survive there. I know some people that have gotten away without these, but in Berlin, that seems to be the thing. I've done a lot of consulting for people, translating at offices, going to appointments with people, and I've never seen them not care about that, at least in Berlin, maybe because there's so much competition in Berlin. So you need to show you have money to support yourself.
And there's how much money do you need to show at this point?
I had about $8,000, which basically I had, and this is like lucky that my parents had it, but I had my parents transfer it into my account. I printed out the statement, and then I transferred it back to them at the end of the process.
Right.
I think myself, I had maybe $3,000 or $4,000 that I had been saving up since I was 16 or something. That was my money. But they want to see that you could support yourself for, I think, like at least 6 months to a year without getting a job, because it could take you a while to get work or steady work.
And so that was 2011. You had about $8,000. Has that changed at this point? I mean, that's about 7 years ago. Has it changed? Yeah.
That seems to still be the same, because I've had a few friends get it recently who are about the same place that I was. So I would still say around $8,000. But again, this isn't an exact, in the actual law, there's no amount written, we can say.
Okay.
It's sort of up to the caseworker. Like, you could have $15,000. And if the caseworker thinks you seem really disorganized, or they're just being an asshole that day, or they don't think that the type of work you do is going to get you a job there, you don't make a good argument for that, then they could reject you anyway. Or you could have less, but they could think, oh, there's a big need for this. It's going to be great. And you could get it.
Okay. Is this $8,000 USD or $8,000 euro?
This was $8,000 USD.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so now I'm asking this because you're quite versed at this. Are you still working as a freelancer? Are you self-employed? What are you doing? Are you consulting?
I'm consulting. I'm kind of in the middle of a transition because I was a freelancer for 4 years, and then I wanted to get my permanent residence in Germany. And I went to a lawyer, and she said it would just be way easier if I had a salary job. So I got a salary job, and I worked that for 2 years. I led the registrar's office of a small liberal arts university in Berlin, which I really liked, actually. But then I kind of wanted to travel, and just given that my family and my friends are all over the place, it's sort of difficult working a normal job, because although you get a lot of vacation in Germany, I had, I think, 6 weeks by the end. I sort of have to split myself, you know, I have to decide, am I going home and seeing everybody, or am I going on a real vacation? So I just quit in mid-December, and then I took a 3-month break, and now I'm going back to self-employment. So I'm doing this time kind of remote project management and marketing operations and launch support. So that's kind of my new baby that I'm building.
Tell me about the German visa guide.
The German Visa Guide. Yes. So that is my ebook called Get Visa Germany. And it sort of started by accident because people realized that I was good at figuring out the visa stuff and I could speak German. And I was just getting so many messages. Every friend of a friend's friend who was considering moving to Germany somehow got in touch with me. And at one point, I was getting multiple messages per week. And I just helped everyone totally free for a couple of years. But then I actually got enough work and it just started to be too much, because it's not like a quick, people always say, oh, can I just ask you a quick question?
Right.
But with visa stuff, that usually leads to about 20 more quick questions, because it's not a straightforward black and white situation, because everybody's process is a little bit different. Everyone has different work experience. They have a different goal for living in Germany and how long they want to live there. Some people just want to come for a year or two because their partner is doing a grad program or whatever. So I started writing these Word documents with all the points and just sending them. And then that kind of got quite long. And I was still getting a ton of questions outside of that. So I finally just sat down for like a week, wrote out my whole brain dump of every little detail I could think of, all the contacts, all the links to the pages that you make the appointments with screenshots of how you make the appointments, templates for how you can set up your letters for different purposes, for adding categories to your visa, that kind of thing. And I designed it into an ebook, and I made a website, and I put it up on there for sale. So that's sort of where that came from. And now that's still up there.
And it sounds like a fantastic resource. I'm sure that people listening in, we want to point them to it. So that's why I asked. Yeah, we want to point.
Yeah, that's kind of aimed at the people like me. So that's kind of the people that want to DIY, but there's just too much information online and they just want a straightforward, like step by step, this is what you do. I also offer some consulting because I found that a lot of times people just want to talk through it. You know, they might understand the rules, but they're just like, because it's a big move, they're about to move their whole life abroad. They kind of want to talk to somebody who understands it and goes through the whole thing. So I also do that sometimes as well.
Right. And we'll plug that towards the end and get more about where everyone can find you. I do want to know and sort of like get into your project management business if you want to let us know more about that.
Sure. It's still a baby, so I'm kind of working it out. But I did project management for 8+ years before going freelance. Well, also during going freelance the last time. So that has all been for a big company. So now I'm kind of making the switch over to working for entrepreneurs, agencies, and small businesses instead of kind of multinational companies or things like that, which is a switch that I like because working for big companies, it's really hard sometimes to make change. Just something like this software is out of date and is taking everybody way longer to do everything. In order to switch to an upgraded software, it has to go through so many stages, get approved by the board of governors sometimes, takes forever. Whereas with smaller companies, you can make change. I like that you can see the change quicker. So you can, something that's not very efficient and is taking more money and time than it needs to, if I point that out, if I find that, then it's a lot quicker to change if it's just a company with, you know, 10 people or just an entrepreneur. So that's kind of been my exciting switch there because I was sort of tired of watching processes that don't work have to continue and continue and continue. I'm sort of working, I think my niche is actually going to be vegan entrepreneurs because I'm vegan. I also have a vegan blog. So I've been running the websites and the marketing and stuff for my blog for goodness, since 2008. So that's going to be my focus. But I just realized that last week that I want to focus on that. So new website in progress.
Okay, so what's your vegan blog?
It's called Veganomnos.
And what's the name of the project management business?
Unsettled Down.
Okay. Sounds like me.
Awesome.
Perfect. Sounds like it's coming together for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've had a couple clients already, so that's been cool. And I'm just trying to kind of, there's a lot of software I specifically want to use, so I'm trying to kind of find opportunities to use that software. So that's been that's the next adventure.
Well, we're going to pivot now and talk more about the city that you call home. Can we do that?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, so you're in Berlin, and I like to get into my guests' favorites about their city. Things that they love about it and want to share with the people just in case people are visiting. We're going to talk about your favorite eats right now. So your favorite place for breakfast or brunch in Berlin.
Ooh, there's this place called Kops. It's an all vegan brunch. And brunch in Berlin, they do a lot of buffets, which is awesome and dangerous. So Kops has like a massive buffet. They do, and they have pancakes, which is somewhat rare. So very exciting. And they do kind of hot foods as well, because a lot of brunches are just, German brunch tends to be like bread and spread or muesli, like granola with kind of yogurt and stuff. But sometimes you just want hot food for brunch. So Kops is in, it's kind of the Mitte-Prenzlauer Berg border, which is, I guess if you're familiar with Berlin, then you know. If not, then ignore that part. And it just has a ton of food. And it has like also like veggie cheese, veggie meat, like all that kind of stuff. And like, I just always leave in a food coma.
Okay. So your favorite cafe, are you a coffee or tea girl?
Ooh, I like both. But when I go out, it's usually for coffee. Tea is kind of a, like nursing a cup on my couch at home sort of thing.
So your favorite coffee shop?
Goodness, I have so many. So there's one that I really love. It's also owned by queer women. I think the name just changed. So it was Black Sheep. And now I think it's White Crow because they were maybe getting sued by some chain in the UK that had the same name. So that place is fantastic. I think they're Australian and they do really amazing coffee. It has a really beautiful aesthetic. It's also all vegan, I think, or at least very vegan friendly. And they have good bagels.
Well, let's talk about your favorite cafe to sort of sit and people watch.
Okay. There's a new one called Home and they have a whole like cookbook section, which I really like. So you can kind of browse through cookbooks and they also have good coffee and cake, all of that. So I really like that one. And they're on the corner overlooking sort of a square. So that's nice. I really like, there's a co-working space called Beta House and they have a cafe, but it has a loft built up into it. That you like crawl up these like spiral stairs and then they have this like library loft and that's kind of fun. It's not, the focus isn't the coffee, but it's good and it's a nice space. Right. And then there's a place that's really cool called Leuchtstoff in Neukölln and that's overlooking kind of the S-Bahn, which is one of the, it's kind of like above ground metro line. And they've built all these couches and stuff up on various level platforms. So that place is always fun too. And for some reason, people are always having really deep conversations really loudly there. So you can like eavesdrop on people's relationship trauma or something.
And your favorite casual dining spot?
Probably, well, so for kind of street food, but has seats, there's this chain called Sahara. And it is all over Neukölln and Kreuzberg. And it does Sudanese kind of falafel thing. So it'll be like falafel and that kind of cuisine. But they put this peanut sauce on everything. And it is fantastically addictive. So you can get kind of a sandwich or you can get a plate. And they put all these fried vegetables like sweet potato and then salad. And then they do this like tofu that's like marinated to be like halloumi. And they also have halloumi if you eat that. And then they just slather it in this peanut sauce. So that's probably my favorite, just kind of quick, cheap place to eat.
Do you have a favorite upscale or upscale-ish place?
I'm not really like an upscale eating kind of person. I like big portions. And when you go to the upscale places, you get like a tiny amount of pretty food on a massive plate. And I'm just like, really? That's it?
Right. Okay, no problem. So I'm sure you'll have a favorite bakery or dessert shop.
Ooh, yeah. So there's this place for cake called Café Vux. They have so many cakes. They're also all vegan, but they do like, everything. Just a lot of places make vegan cake and they don't really know how to bake it and it just tastes dry. Like, I think it's because like people who don't usually cook vegan are trying to cook vegan, but theirs are moist and like amazing and they lather them in frosting and so good. They also have bagels too. So that's probably my favorite place for cake. There's a kosher bakery. I've only had their stuff at other locations, not at their location, but they do these croissants, also vegan, and they're amazing. Like, they're just the most flakiest kind of, they're so good. So that's probably for that. Yeah, for bakeries, I would say like those ones.
And cocktail bars or wine bar?
So my favorite wine bar is called Facciola. I spend way too much time there when I'm in Berlin. The owner is fantastic. The wine is fantastic. It's all Italian wine. It's kind of an experience there. Like, everybody's just friendly and talks to each other, which for Berlin can be super nice because people tend to be a bit more reserved. So when you walk in there, it's kind of like going to Italy. And that's in Kreuzberg. And I love it.
So I'm going to get into your business a bit. What's the best place for drunk food or dive bars?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I go to that Sudanese place a lot, but probably if you're in Neukölln, there's like this area that has all Middle Eastern food. So if you want some drunk falafel, that is the place to go. And you can get, like, there's multiple locations. So you basically want the ones that have Arabic on them because there's like Turkish and there's Arabic. But I find like I don't find the Turkish falafel as good as the like Lebanese or whatever. So for that, you would just go kind of to that street and just pick a place, really. Make sure they like fry the balls instead of microwave them. And you can even get ones for like €1.50. And they have like the tahini and the little like pickle things that are pink and so good. So that's probably the best drunk food. In Berlin, like, falafel is a solid drunk food choice.
You have a favorite dive bar?
So Berlin has this, it kind of depends. Like, there's these dive bars. I guess they almost all count for me as dive bars. There's Kneipen, but that's kind of, you would be the only foreigner to go in there. But they can be fun. And usually it's like the neighborhood bar. So if you want like the traditional German dive bar experience, you can go one of them. They tend to be cheaper too. And it's kind of like each neighborhood will have like a Kneipe. They just have a look so you know them. So there's that. There's one in my neighborhood that's always kind of fun. And people are kind of shocked that we're in there because I don't live in a super hip area with tons of foreigners. So whenever we go in there, they're like, who are these people? But in terms of dive bars that aren't specifically German focused, there's this one I go to a lot called Baylaga. It's kind of queer, but not only queer, like it's not officially a gay bar or anything, but it just has like, you know, like the assorted couches that don't match, pretty cheap drinks. On Wednesdays, they do this Küfe thing, which is a thing in Germany. It stands for Küche für alle. So that's sort of like food for all. And they basically get a bunch of cheap food left over from the grocery store and they make food, they make something out of it. And then for like €2 or €3, you can get a plate of food from whatever they made that day.
It's like communal eating or gathering, if you will.
Yeah, sort of. Like in the US, people have told me it's like food, not bombs, but I thought that was for the homeless in the US, but maybe I'm wrong. So this is like for anyone, doesn't like, you're not being an asshole if you eat some and you're not homeless. It's just kind of using up food that supermarkets were going to throw away kind of thing, usually.
Okay. And what's the name of the bar in your neighborhood?
I don't even know. I think it's called Trauma. So Trauma in my neighborhood. I wouldn't send a bunch of tourists there, because, but like, if you're in Berlin and you're staying somewhere, there will be one in your neighborhood. So it's the kind of thing that I think you go to your neighborhood for.
Right. Okay. It's like Cheers, but German.
Yeah, kind of. It took me a year or so to muster up the courage to go inside. Because okay. I feel like I'm invading. Like, I think I have some of this guilt that, you know, there's so many foreigners coming to Berlin, and obviously, like, that's fine. But then sometimes to invade, like, a super German space, I'm always like, ooh.
Well, you belong now. You learned German in 10 months, so you belong. You belong.
It's like, I don't want to raise your rents. I'm sorry.
Right. Okay, so what about some open air markets?
The really big one in Berlin is in on Sundays at a park called Mauer Park, which is like Wall Park. Like, it used to be by the Berlin Wall. And they do their famous thing. They have like all the food and the shops and vintage stuff that you can buy. But they have this kind of pit where they do open air karaoke. So they're kind of famous for that, because you can kind of watch people of varying levels of skills do karaoke to like a massive group of people.
Okay.
So that's probably the major one in Berlin. But we have so many markets. So there's one, it's not like a weekend market or anything, but Tuesdays and Fridays, there's a Turkish market on this street in Kreuzberg called Maybach Ufer. And that's like fruit and vegetables mostly, but it's so cheap. And then they have like some street food stuff. They also have falafel, and they have my favorite stand there. They have a spice stand, and they have these massive bags of every type of spice and spice mix and tea you could think of. And each of them is like €1. So I always go there for all my spices. And they have like a tea person. And then they have like some like jewelry and like hippie clothes. And there's always like some buskers at the end, because there's kind of like a seating area where people can sit. And that's Tuesdays and Fridays during the day. So I think it goes like from the morning until 5 p.m. But if you go when they're closing, you can usually get things super cheap.
What about local designers or local producers?
Huh. There's a couple green sustainable clothing shops that I like. At least I like to look at. There's one called Love Co. They have a couple locations, and they do stuff with like organic bamboo material, whatever. And it's quite nice. And then there's a place called Zustoff. They also do fair trade kind of organic clothing. I like that kind of stuff. I probably spend a lot of time in, there's a chain of vegan grocery stores called Vegans, and they source stuff, like they make their own products in Germany versus importing a lot of veggie vegan stuff from elsewhere. I like going in there.
What about vintage shops? It strikes me that Berlin might have this huge vintage scene.
Yes, it definitely does. I have not had so much luck with it, but there is a big shop. This is probably the first place I would usually send people to in Friedrichshain, which is like an area of the city called Humana. So Humana is it's like the Salvation Army of Germany, except they actually make a profit from the donations, which is a bit questionable. But anyway, they are the chain of thrift stores. But they have a four-story massive one in Friedrichshain. So if you are the type that is really good at combing through lots and lots of stuff to find the gems, then that is the place for you. I usually go there and get super overwhelmed and then just go somewhere and pay way more money for it. But it's probably also good if you're shopping for like a costume for something and you're going to rip something up or whatever. And they also have, you know, like pots and pans and books and blah, blah, blah. So that's a good place to look just for the sheer quantity of stuff. There's also, man, there's like a lot of little shops in this one area of Mitte. It's another area of the city, and it's near the station called Weinmeisterstraße. And if you just walk around there, you'll see a lot of like little vintage shops, and there's like some cute stuff. I always struggle with those things because I'm kind of on the higher end of the sizes. Like, I'm like usually within the normal range of sizes, but the higher one, and I find a lot of these shops just have like size 6 to 8, maybe 10. And I'm kind of a 14. So it's, yeah.
I get it. Yeah, because vintage things were, well, older clothing was always smaller than it is now. So I completely get it. Do you have a favorite neighborhood?
Ooh, well, I really like my neighborhood, but I think it wouldn't make sense for tourists to go there. I think cool areas to walk around. There is, in Kreuzberg, there's this one street area called Oranienstraße. And there are those kind of lots of cute cafes and record shops and all of that. And then I really like the area of Kreuzkuhn. So that's kind of where the district Kreuzberg and the district Neukölln meet. And there's a street there called Weserstraße. And they have, that's kind of like a good place for bars and falafel and things like that. So that's kind of fun. And if you wander the streets around that, you can also find cute cafes and some vintage stores and stuff like that.
What would you say is the best time to visit Berlin?
Probably the summer. I would say like from May on is pretty safe. Or during December, because then you get all the Christmas market stuff, which is kind of everywhere and probably quite interesting. And there's hot wine and all of that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the off-season period and gems that you might find in the off-season.
It sort of depends on the weather. Like if I think I came to Berlin in February or something. So I came at the worst possible time, but I still had a great time. Obviously, there's less tourists. It's probably cheaper if you don't come in the summer or right during December. So I wouldn't say don't come. But if you're one of those people that cannot handle cold weather or darkness, I know I have some friends that like grew up in warm places and they're just like, nah, no, I don't care. Like I'll just put on like a heavy jacket and go for it. But then I grew up in New York where like it would often snow several feet.
Right. As appealing as the visa situation sounds, I just don't think that I could handle it. Okay, so a couple more things. Let's get into a bit of a culture, like the culture scenes, like the museums, galleries.
Totally. I'm the least cultured person alive, but Berlin has a lot of, obviously, a lot of good museums. One interesting one to check out is the Jewish Museum. The architecture is super interesting, so there's that. And they just have a lot of, I mean, it's quite educational. And if you're coming to Berlin or Germany, that's probably an aspect that you want to look into given the history. But I think it's just very well done. And I would recommend either doing like the audio tour or taking a guide, because there's a lot of stuff with the architecture that you wouldn't notice by yourself or you don't realize why it's that way. And then they have some interactive special exhibits there and stuff sometimes. So that is kind of cool. I mean, there's a lot of like more traditional art galleries. That's not really my thing, but that is absolutely there if you are into that. There's the Neue Nationalgalerie. I've been in there. It's massive. It used to be a train station, I think, and they turned it into an art gallery. And then in terms of like culture, like there's a big opera scene in Berlin. So there's a couple major opera houses. So you can do that. And there's also a lot of young opera singers that have come to Berlin and started all their own projects and different events and stuff like that. So I quite like those. There's this one called Opera Vino, where they go to kind of places with wine, and it's opera in a wine bar with wine. And then there's Opera on Tap, which I think came from New York, or the US at least, that they started. And that sort of, they do different opera things also in a pub while people are drinking. So that's kind of fun. Then there's plenty of dance places. I'm not sure. There's one I went to called Dock 11, I think. They do kind of more interesting, non-traditional dance stuff.
Avant-garde?
Yeah, maybe that's the word I'm looking for.
And what would you say is the best way to score tickets or to know about these events?
So if you live in Berlin and you're 30 or under, they have this card. So this is just a tip in case somebody is moving there or already lives there. If you're under 30, you can get like really cheap seats for way cheaper. So just look into that. You can probably find it by Googling like Art Pass, or I forgot what it's called, like under 30 Berlin. Otherwise, probably you can book them online. I think the process would be different for each opera house, place, event, dance studio, whatever.
Is there like a ticket hub or something like that?
The times I've gotten to shows, I've just looked up the actual venue and bought the tickets there. If it's a film festival or something, then they usually have their own process. So there's a big film festival in Berlin, I think in February, called Berlinale. And that is quite competitive, especially if you want to see like the famous movies that are being released. So you need to kind of wake up early and either they release a certain number of tickets online. So you have to be like sitting there refreshing to try to book that right away. Or you show up, there's like a ticket office and people will just show up early in the morning, or you can try to get tickets maybe right before the show. There's a lot of methods for getting tickets for that. So I think it's really quite different, and you have to sort of look into what you're doing and how that might work.
Okay, sounds good. What would you say is a great day trip from Berlin?
So I take Americans a lot to Poland just because they like the idea of going to Poland for the day. There's a town that you can get to called Szczecin. The town in itself is not super, super exciting, but you can go and you can eat pierogies and you can drink Polish beer, and shops are open on Sunday there. They're not in Germany. And you can ride the train and be like, woo, I'm in Poland. So that's kind of fun. And it's super cheap. So there's this ticket for the train called the Berlin-Brandenburg ticket, which lets you travel as much as you want within the states of Berlin and Brandenburg for one day. And you can buy a group ticket for five people. I think it last I did it, so that was maybe a year or two ago, it was 28 euros. So if you split 28 by five, that's a pretty good price. And that's as much as you want to ride the train. So you can get there and back for like five, 6 euros. And it's pretty cheap there anyway. So I do that as a day trip a lot. Otherwise, if it's warm, there's this area called the Spreewald, where it's sort of like all these canals and boats, but German version. And that's super nice. You can take the train out there and you can have like good pickles and German food and kind of wander around these canals. And you can go on one of these boats with people in like traditional German dress if you want. So that would be a fun option. Or you can go to Potsdam, which is 45 minutes away. And there's a castle and like beautiful gardens if you're into castles.
What would you say is a faux pas that a visitor should avoid?
Ooh. So if you ask, how are you? You are going to get the full answer. I think as Americans, we say, how are you? And the answer is always good. How are you? And that's it.
Okay.
That's not how it works in Germany. They don't do like the small talk thing. So if you ask a question and you just mean it to be like a nicety and you don't really want to know, don't ask it, because you will hear about their divorce and their horrible work thing. Like, people ask things if they legitimately want to know the answer. So that's one to be aware of. Probably also, like, Americans are known for talking really loudly. So that's sort of a thing to be aware of. I mean, obviously there's other countries and cultures that talk really loudly, but you know.
Right. Okay, perfect. Okay, so we now are at the point where we're going to talk more about where listeners can find you. So just let us know where we can find you, your virtual homes.
Definitely. So the ebook, if you're thinking of moving to Germany, my home for that is getvisagermany.com. If you want to contact me, there's a contact form there and everything. So that's probably the best way to get in touch with me about that. If you're interested in vegan or vegetarian travel, or I also have some recipes, you're just, even if you're not vegan, you're just curious about food, then vegannumnums.net. So my big focus with that blog is city guides. So I do a lot of city guides for places I've spent significant time, where to stay, where to eat, what to do, how to meet other like-minded people. And I also always include, if I've stayed there a while, like a section for LGBT stuff. So if that's you, that could help you out. So I would say my Berlin is my most thorough one because I've been living there 7 years. So you can check that out. And I just did one for Chiang Mai, Thailand, that is the most thorough post I've ever written that I think could be very helpful for people, even if they're not vegan. And then for my kind of self-employed project management stuff, that is unsettleddown.com.
Perfect. That sounds good. And I'm so happy you were able to take time out and get on with me today.
Thank you. I'm happy that we found each other.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, Berlin has sort of been on my list sort of loosely, like as a plan, like, oh, well, if other things don't work out, maybe I'll look at Berlin. So I don't
totally
know.
Come visit. Let me know if you're in town.
I just want to say thanks again. We're in touch now, as I always say to people. You're part of the collective now.
Yay!
So, looking forward to watching things unfold and connect with you later.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Excited.
Okay, so thanks so much.
Okay, thanks for tuning in today. I hope you found this local's perspective informative and even inspiring. If so, please consider subscribing to Loco using iTunes or your favorite Android podcast player. If you have any comments or questions, or even a story you'd like to submit, please connect with us at loco.co, that's LOCAUX.CO. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.